Good morning or good afternoon, wherever you are. This is Selling Digital Downloads Q&A.
Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Yes, as Chris said, this is the Selling Digital Downloads Q&A, the Q&A attached to the Selling Digital Downloads webinar, which we will have a link for you to check out if you haven't already. I am joined by Mr. Chris Garrett, Ms. Amelia Briscoe, and Mr. Brian Hayes. My name is Robert Bruce, and so thanks for being here. And we're taking your questions that you submitted. We got about 10 of them for this Q&A. And then for those who are live, go ahead and drop your questions here as well. We'll take a few minutes after the prepared your submitted questions and answer stuff as it comes up in the chat for just a few minutes at the end of the broadcast here. So, all right, so let's get this going. Question number one. And by the way, I did not, because I'm kind of a privacy freak, attach names to these questions. So if you see your question here and you're wondering why the heck did I not get credit for it, we're giving you credit, but you know, these things are public and we didn't explicitly ask for your permission to put your name up and all that. So that's how I operate. Nobody's fault but mine.
Yeah.
So,
And also to make it challenging for Claire doing the transcript.
oh, that's right. I love it. Anytime I can make Claire's job difficult, I love it. Claire, you're the best. All right, let's get to question number one. And this will be for Chris and Amelia and Brian here. This will be, let's do kind of a free-for-all. I think it might be an interesting way to approach the answers to these questions. I'll ask them. Let's have a little free-for-all back and forth and then see how it turns out. So get a couple of different inputs for each one. All right, so question number one, in terms, and these are all in the context of how what questions do you have about selling digital downloads with Rainmaker? And this is pretty much the whole range of questions, specifically in Rainmaker, connecting the product to how it's displayed, how they pay, controlling access to it after they pay, memberships, and on and on. So the whole thing, how do you sell digital downloads with Rainmaker? Chris, could you please answer this question for us in 3 seconds or less?
So in 30 seconds or less, you need to click the link that Brian shared in the question box to last week's webinar. You need to watch Amelia's awesome video that goes through it step by step. You need to check out the knowledge base, which has more detailed information about each step. And if you still have problems, contact support and they will help you. I can say in brief, though, connecting the product to how it is displayed, the product itself is the checkout. It's the thing that allows you to say, this is the description of what you're buying, this is how much it costs, and that's what gives people access. So using the member groups is how you give people access, but it's permission to access a group of things. And then you need to have a page, a download page, that is restricted to that group or groups. And send them to that. So the download and the product are separate but related in that the product grants you access in return for your payment. So Amelia's video goes through in detail, step by step, and it has an awesome Aussie accent to go along with it as a bonus. It's a free bonus, you don't pay extra for that.
Yeah, we had talked about just playing that for this Q&A, but that would be maybe a little cheating. But definitely go take a look at that. And that link, as Chris said, is in the chat now to get there. Okay, so question number two. Creating online courses to sell. Does Rainmaker have an LMS functionality? Mr. Hayes, you out there?
Yes. Hi, everyone. Yes, the Rainmaker does come along with a powerful learning management system that you can use from the beginning to creating the course, marketing the course, and then delivering it right through your Rainmaker site. There's extensive documentation in the knowledge base, and we also have one guide in the knowledge base called Creating and Selling Online Courses. It includes some checklists you can print out to make sure you're covering all the steps. And we'll take you through all the steps you need to go from starting with creating the course all the way to delivering it to your members who purchase it. So start with finding the guide called Creating and Selling Online Courses, and you can always hit us up in support if you have any questions.
What one thing I'm thinking of too with this question is for those who may not be, I think learning management system, that's an LMS, but what's a anybody here on the call, what's a quick definition of a learning management system? Why would I care?
It's for creating courses. So LMS is just a fancy name for it. But the reason why it's called a learning management system is because it's not just about the course layout and content. It's about restricting access to it and granting access to it. So really just think about it as the course creation functionality. And one of the great things that the LMS has in Rainmaker is you can create the outline all at once. So you can, for people who know it when they see it, you can put your outline into a bulk creator, and then you can actually navigate to make sure that you've got it right in your head before producing the whole content. So it's just a course creator. It's just learning management system is the catch-all industry term for something like this.
Yeah. And so really, I mean, on the revenue side, on the business side, we're talking about, I mean, potentially a line or lines, if you're talking about multiple courses of business, the ability to easily create that and put it together.
Yeah. And also people use it for the membership sites as well. Remember, it's not just about courses with a fixed end point. But, you know, the classic way to monetize information, knowledge, experiences to create courses, but not just one course. Think about university, you know, 101, 202, 303. So think about how, as you say, it's multiple lines of business, multiple streams of income. And to Brian's point, also marketing them, you can do free courses. So you can use it as a teaser to get email addresses to sell to them and then upsell them to a course.
Yeah, and for those of you who may have been in on the pilot program when the Rainmaker platform launched, that's exactly what Brian Clark did. We had the free registration that was primarily put together by a podcast that we did, a public podcast, so led into a free registration, and then everything was kind of dripped out from there using the LMS. So really cool way to get the opt-ins, either registration or email opt-in as well. So,
and if I can make one more recommendation, absolutely. I've seen customers say that it's very helpful if you have your course outline at least generally created on paper. It makes it a little easier to go in and use the LMS.
Oh, yeah.
So starting with something on paper, and I found this personally too, does seem to make things a little more relaxing when you go in and use the LMS tools.
Right on. Yeah. Yeah. The actual creation of the content for the course is a webinar in and of itself. But yes, absolutely. Brian, maybe you can run that webinar later. We've already touched on it multiple times, but see what you're doing this afternoon.
I'll create an outline for it right now.
There we go. All right. Question number three from a person who shall not be named. Do you have research on whether people access landing pages or sales pages with a desktop or laptop or on mobile primarily? Where are they hitting these landing and sales pages? Where are they accessing them? Or do people see about it here on a mobile and wait until they're on their laptop to actually buy the product? So where is the point of origin as it relates to our, you know, the sales pages and landing pages that we were all writing and creating?
We've seen it with our data that a lot of people are just spending their lives on the phone. Yep. But we also see that a lot of people transact on their laptop or the computer when they get back home or get back to the desk. I don't know if it's a convenience thing, a security thing, if they don't want to get the credit card out in public, or maybe they don't want to use the credit card over a public Wi-Fi hotspot or their telephone systems data network. But we see that a lot. They start on the phone and then transact later. I don't know, Amelia and Brian, what insights do you have?
Yeah, Amelia, I think specifically had some, well, one thing I wanted to point out too, Chris, to your point, before we go into that, from the last question is, it also depends, of course, on what the landing page is. If it's an opt-in, I think there's probably it's an easier transaction on mobile versus a sale. But yeah, it's gonna vary depending on what type of landing page we're talking about.
Yeah,
but
for sure, yeah.
Amelia, you out there?
I am. G'day.
Thank you for being here.
I guess to that, I mean, just me personally, I don't tend to buy things while I'm on my mobile device. So I would wait till I got home and on my desktop or laptop. So for me, it's more of a case of having trying to remember my PayPal password and things like that while I'm on my mobile device, which I generally don't remember. So in the terms of actually seeing some of the data, if you're interested, I spoke to Lauren, who's our stats person, who's a bit of our guru in the company. She said that when you're in your analytics account, if you go into the behavior section and into the site content, when you're searching through pages and who's looked at what, there is a little drop down above it where you can select device category is what it's called, and that will segment what's been viewed on desktop and what's been viewed on mobile. So that's a good way of seeing if there's a specific landing page, who's viewed it on what device.
So you said something interesting at the beginning, your personal take on it, maybe a little roundabout with Chris and Brian too. I am the same way. I realized that when you said that I don't really transact anything on mobile. If I think my personal shortcut is to, you know, at least on the iPhone, I'll throw it into the reading list for Safari or bookmark it some other way, and then do the transaction on that landing page on a laptop. I don't have a desktop computer, but just the laptop. I guess the laptop is the new desktop. Chris, have you ever done a transactional thing on a mobile phone, like a PayPal salesy kind of thing?
Yeah, I do, but the majority of what I do is at my desktop. I have that thing where I can't sleep, so 3 a.m. I make really random purchases that I regret. Right. Like,
Amazon becomes a big problem.
Yeah, I have parcels arrive and I'm like, did you order this? No, I didn't order that. But the majority of the purchases, you know, considered purchases especially, I do from my desktop. And part of it is because the convenience of Amazon, you know, the one click, that gets me every time with the Kindle stuff. But
right.
To type in your credit card details and everything, it's still not quite as easy using the phone.
Right. Okay, so let's go to question number 4 here. This is an interesting one. What are some examples, specific examples of small, quote, very cheap digital products you could sell to test the market to see if there's enough potential for something larger? So putting something out there that's not going to take a lot of maybe time or money to produce, but that would be an actually good test for what might work, you know, for a larger course down the road or a larger product down the road or something that you put money, more money and time into. How do we test these things out?
The first test I've pretty much always done is either an ebook or a webinar. So you can call it a workshop and, invite people to it. If they register and attend for free, then they're willing to put some effort in, and then you do a paid one. And even Chris Brogan does small paid webinars, because if it's worth learning and if it's worth paying for, then it's worth paying for as a class. And then you can say, you know, attend live, get the webinar recording, get the audio, get the transcript, get some worksheets, and charge a small amount for having that information. And then ebooks are a really good way of testing the market, because you can charge like $7, $17, $10, and you can see if anybody wants to buy it. The only problem is with an ebook is it can take a long time to write, but maybe it's a collection of your previous articles edited together in book form. Darren Rouse's first two ebooks, that's what he did, his 31 Days to a Better Blog, was available for free on his blog, and he just compiled it into an ebook.
I remember him talking too, even prior to the production of their own ebooks. They were really testing the market with affiliate products. So it wasn't even products that they had, but you know, other people's products, selling them, the transaction actually takes place. This one is selling and this one is not. Therefore, we can, you know, deduce that.
Yeah.
So that's like low risk and no production cost.
Yeah, and it's a good insight into what people are willing to pay. Now, there is a caveat to that, in that just because somebody's willing to pay $10 or $50 from an affiliate link, there's the plus or minus based on reputation. They might feel more trust for you than them, or vice versa, that the affiliate link might go to a famous person or like Amazon. You know, if it's sold by Amazon, you've got a lot more faith that it's going to be delivered than, say, AliExpress, eBay, you know, in Canada, Kijiji, or even things like the very obscure marketplaces and stuff. So it's not the same as you selling something, because a lot of the time people do want to hear from you, but, you know, it is a good indicator.
Maybe it's more on the, that would be more, on the research, considered on the research side than an actual test. I talked to Ryan Holiday on Kelton's show, The Writer Files, recently, and he had something interesting. This could get a little iffy and maybe a little dangerous. You'd have to be careful with the information that you get. But one thing he talked about in terms of what the next book he is going to write is just dinner conversations. Now, again, that's anecdotal. Maybe you want to have a lot of dinners with a lot of different people to have something to actually pull from. But as a precursor to even a small, quote, cheap product, you know, if you're able to engage people in real life with your idea, that might be, you know, certainly on the research side and the things you're talking about, Chris. But it might also help with even the pre setup for what may or may not work.
Yeah, definitely. I've always found that the best things for you to create as a product or a service is things people demand of you without you offering it. You know, if people are constantly talking to you and asking you questions about something, then you've probably got some authority in that area and you probably have some solutions that people are asking for. Like, you know, just random ideas. What would you think about Robert Bruce? Well, doing voiceovers, public speaking, radio, podcasting, poetry, creative writing, the dreaded blank page. Amelia says karaoke. Yeah, I'd forgotten that. You know, you think of a person and you can think of all the ways that they are better than you at something, more experienced with, you know, have solutions. And that is a natural low-hanging fruit, to use the awful phrase, for you to create.
You're becoming a brand man, Mr. Garrett. what is involved and what does it mean in terms of brand? That's cool. Yeah, I like that. All right, let's go to question number 5. I have no idea what MindNode Pro is, so somebody else is going to have to jump in here. Question:
it's a mind mapping program.
Oh, okay. MindNode Pro, I use MindNode Pro to map out ideas and systems. Well, there's my definition right there. And would love to see some sort of depiction of the entire process of creating a product. Does one exist? Amelia, you got an idea on this, or have you seen anything?
We actually do have something in the knowledge base. It's not in the guide for selling digital products, but if you go into I think it's create a membership site guide in the knowledge base, there is an infographic that will outline those individual steps that I went through in the video. I can drop a link into the chat box, but you'll have to remember to replace a little portion of the link with your own domain name, because obviously I can't generate a dynamic link for everybody's knowledge base link. Let's see if I can grab it here.
On the fly.
On the fly. Okay. No, that's not the one. Sorry.
So this is something we can put in the show notes of the Q&A page, which we will email out to everyone to have access to. Is that right? Or?
Sorry, don't click on that link, guys. Sorry about that. Okay, I'm putting in something else there.
Rogue links going into the chat.
Yeah, it's not a clickable link that I've just added there. So put
That's going to ensure everybody clicks that link, what you just said.
Yeah. Just put your domain name in front of that before admin. Make sure you add a forward slash as well. And that will take you to the infographic that's in the knowledge base.
Amelia, are you referring to the how to create and sell a product behind the scenes yes. infographic?
Yes.
So you can, in the knowledge base, there's a couple of ways to search. You can find it that way too, if anybody wants to take a look at it.
How would that be done, Brian? Just for a...
Like what I usually do is just go to the front page of the knowledge base and start to type in some keywords. So I'll drop the title in the chat box. And if you just go into the front page of the knowledge base and use the search bar, putting those keywords I just dropped in should pull it up. It's a nice little infographic that shows the whole process.
Right on. Right on. All right. Question number six. Can I set a pay what you want price for my product with a minimum and a maximum? This would be helpful to test a product. Okay, first of all, what is a brief description of the pay what you want model, which is you have made something, you are offering something, and you are, instead of putting a set price on it, you are saying, come and pay what you want. There are many examples of this. Of course, as I say that, I can't think of a specific one.
I've got one. I'm doing one right now.
What do you got? What do you got?
I'm selling a 3D printing course at pre-selling because it's not complete. It's in early beta. So I'm actually building it as people buy it. And I might actually leave it as pay as you want because it's giving access to like students and young people and people without a lot of money, which is nice.
I love this model. So if you don't mind, Chris, could you very quickly just in your course there explain maybe real quick why you decided to go with pay what you want before we get to this question and then how you're implementing it?
I'm implementing it through Gumroad and then sending people to my Rainmaker site just because they had the built-in pay what you want feature.
Right.
Now, the popular use of pay what you want is not just pay what you want, but if you pay more than the average, then you get bonuses. I'm not doing that right now. So like there'll be a bundle of comics or science fiction books or, you know, games, and you get six games, but if you pay more than the average, you get nine, you know? And so it's constantly calculating the average of what people are paying to incentivize people to pay more. I'm not doing that. I'm just saying, get it, pay what you think it's worth in return for giving me feedback because I want to build it around you. The typical MVP approach. Now, what is really cool about mine is I don't do any tricks. I don't do any manipulation, but people are still paying $10, $15 up to $25. Yeah, a lot of people are paying a dollar, but there are a lot of people paying, you know, what I think is a fair amount. That's really cool. I'm giving it away to teachers to share with the school, you know, with their students, because it's an STEM thing. I want to encourage more kids getting into it.
Yeah.
So you could even pay zero if you've got a school email address. But what's cool is it means that the barrier is a dollar. And, you know, if you're in the hobby, then you can afford a dollar because otherwise you can't afford the hobby. But I didn't use Rainmaker to take the money, use Gumroad. What you could do is have a product with set up with various coupons that mean you've got a range of prices, and then you could have different buttons that allow you to check out at different prices. And that's how you'd do it with Rainmaker. But what I like is it tells people what they think is fair based on the sales page. So it's not people telling you, this is what I think it's worth after I've gone through it and consumed it. This is how much I think it's worth from your description. And it's telling me that they think it's worth $10 to $15.
Yeah, that's the really cool thing about this is it to me, it accomplishes a number of things, but two of the most important are it allows an easy barrier of entry for those who may not be able to pay, you know, a larger amount, like you said, but also you're going to get kind of more of the patron, quote, patron kind of customers who love you, love what you do, and have a ton of disposable income. So you're going to get those higher prices. And I've seen numbers, don't quote me on this because if I find something specific, I'll drop it in the chat. But we're in it's going to be case by case and product by product, but there's a lot of times when this will beat out, you know, set price models. But again, it depends on who your audience is, what you're selling, all of that. Brian, what do you think about this? I mean, Chris commented on it within Rainmaker, but setting the price at with a minimum and a maximum for this pay what you want model.
Well, the nice thing is about when you create, because you'll want to create different products to give people the option to check out for the different price points. The nice thing is if you start, say, with $5, $10, and $15, is you can adjust the prices of the products as you move forward, and it won't impact people who've already purchased the product. So it gives you a chance to adjust based on what's working. Is that what you were thinking, Chris? Is that how you're doing it? You're creating separate products that say, hey, if you want to pay a dollar, click this.
I was thinking using coupons. So the buy button would link to the direct checkout link from the coupon.
Right. Coupons would probably even be more efficient than creating multiple products. And again, I'm a big knowledge base guy. It's how I learn. We have a lot of documentation on coupons in the knowledge base, and we'll be there to help you and support as well.
Very cool. Question number 7 from who knows who, because I have privacy issues. What is the best proven is a dangerous word in the context of a lot of this, but what is the best proven way to organize the material? For instance, lots of short components in a big envelope. What's a good length for video and audio material, please? And we're going to assume that we're talking about, you know, courses and things leading to the sale of digital downloads. Chris, you got something in mind?
You'll get a lot of opinions. It's a piece of string thing. The main thing is keep it engaging. My most successful product that used to pay my mortgage, the webinars that were live and then recorded, they were 90 minutes long, and there's a lot of them. And people loved it. People got success with it, and people kept buying it. At the same time, you will hear people say that, you know, attention spans are 15 minutes, 10, 15 minutes. And I've been through a lot of courses that are like that. My 3D course that we just talked about, the videos about creating 3D objects, the 3D design videos, I tend to keep each piece 10 to 15 minutes. So you'll get more people progressing through it. But it depends on your audience. And if you can keep it engaging. Amelia's on a lot of videos. How long are your videos, Amelia?
Interestingly enough, I try to keep mine around 5, and that's based on the advice I got from my 2 video coaches back in, 2010, Chris? I used to have my own membership site, and I did video courses on how to do specific things, and I find that keeping videos to probably about 3 to 5 minutes is perfect for your customers, because they'll want to stop and do something and then come back to it. So recording that video that's on the webinar last week is hard for me, because I like doing my videos in small increments, not in one big 40-minute video.
Okay. I think that's a good point. In the creation, you've got to factor that in as well, what's easy for you to create. And editing large videos means that you might have to wait a long time before you can publish it.
Yeah. Yep. I also find that your customers will have progressive success if they've got smaller videos to go through, so they feel like they're progressing and they're learning and they're, you know, and that makes the product more enjoyable, I find.
Yeah. And transcript goes into that video editing process as well for length. Thankfully, the transcripts of the video and audio that I do, like Claire has no problem whatsoever. It's, you know, she loves doing the transcribing for that stuff because it's so easy, you know, mm-hmm. to understand, you know, and I make it so easy for her. So it's kind of but you know, it can be a difficult job.
You're going to have to send her a basket after those fake news statements.
Fake news. So maybe on a higher level, 60,000 foot view with this question too, you're right, Chris, there's a thousand opinions on this, but one thing I don't know who said it. But recently I heard, it was different examples, but I always think, hey, people still sit for 4 hours watching Shakespeare, you know, 400 years later, right?
Yeah.
And at the same time, they'll drop out of a 6 second, you know, Vine video if it sucks. I guess Vine isn't around anymore. But so, you know, the timing question, you guys are right. Who are you? Who is your audience? And what are you trying to accomplish?
Yeah, people will binge watch Netflix series.
That's right.
And they won't watch a 5 minute YouTube video. That's right. Context is important. And, you know, if you're teaching something, it could be that they're desperate to know about it, or it could be that it's like, yeah, I've got some time. The same thing goes with podcasts. You know, I did a 90 minute or something podcast with Darren Rouse the other day. And lots of people have given nice words about it. I don't know how many people are going to listen to it to the end, though.
Yeah. And then, and again, it's not, it's apples and oranges, but like I didn't realize this. I just
apples
got
and PCs.
Apples and PCs. Thank you. I recently got back into, once in a while, I'll catch Joe Rogan's podcast. Those things are like 3 hours long, 2.5, 3 hours long. And it's, you know, one of the biggest shows on earth. And of course, that's entertainment and philosophy. It's a different kind of thing than business or technology, but again, back to audience, but you're right. What does your audience want?
Anthony agrees it's easier to edit and render short videos, and you know, your memory of your computer does play a part. You know, if you're doing high definition, you know, 4000K video, you might not have the capacity to do 90 minutes. If I'm creating something, I take a long time to edit. So the longer videos means people have to wait longer for me to produce it. If I'm listening to something, I like it to be around 20 minutes because that's about the length of me on the treadmill at the gym if and when I go back.
Yeah. Perfect. All right. Let's go. We've got three more questions here. And for those listening, please drop, if you've got some questions as we're going here, drop them in the chat. And we're going to take just a few minutes at the end of this broadcast to go over those as well before we close this thing out. So question number 8, how to best use free quote tasters of your product to encourage people to buy the bigger product? This does sound like a Mr. Garrett question for sure.
Yeah. So there's a couple of things at play here. One is the instant gratification of giving somebody something free in return for their attention, their email address, their attention. So first of all, it has to have high perceived value. So you can't just say, here's the index page, right? That you could put that on the sales page to prove that there's depth to the information. But if you're going to give it away, it has to have intrinsic value. And then from there, they need to get enough satisfaction, maybe results, preferably results, that they say, yes, this is for me. It's going to work for me. I'm going to enjoy the process. And I can see my future outcome being improved by this product. So what you have to do is the classic example Frank Kern uses, and I think he got it from somebody else, is about online dating and about being able to get a date. And it says the entire journey goes from being alone and unhappy through to happily ever after with the partner of your choice. So you can break that down and you can give away the first bit, which is how to find people who might be compatible and how to break the ice with them. And that's awesome. It gets people on the first step. You've not given the whole thing away. You've just given away the bit that will get them on the journey. And once they're on the journey with you, they want to stick with you. So they'll want to buy the thing. And then you say, I can't give you everything in this, but I'm going to give you this first part. If you want to go deeper with this, I have a product that'll tell you A, B, and C in this way, which is different from everybody else, which is awesome for you because, and then you make all your promises. So you get people to give their email address, you give them the taste and hopefully some early results, and then tell them how they can get more results, better results, faster results, deeper results by doing the next step, which is your paid thing.
And doesn't this too, as maybe a step back from the actual discussion of the product or leading into the actual transaction, I mean, this is just content marketing 101 as well, right?
Yes.
I mean, just content. Content, attraction, bringing people into your quote funnel, from out there in the world and producing stuff that can be spread and is public.
And it works better if it's designed as a sequence rather than kind of chaotic and accidental.
Yeah.
I was telling somebody about their website. I've done some site clinics and critiques lately. I love doing them. And the person had literally decades of information, but it wasn't in any order or sequence or like navigation. And so instead of it being this treasure trove, it was overwhelm. It was like saying, here's the research library, go for it. That's not a course, that is a brain dump. So it has to be a sequence as well.
And yeah, there's a great guide that was published a few months ago called Create a Free Email Course Autoresponder Sequence to Sell a Paid Product that I'd recommend checking out, because you can drip some of it out leading up to, hey, you like this? We'll purchase the product. I followed the steps, and it's really good for helping you set everything that you would need up.
Sweet.
Yeah, cool.
Question number 9. In the context of how do we sell digital downloads with Rainmaker, something on SEO would be useful, but I recognize this may not be the appropriate forum. how do you do SEO? So this is a huge question, and we have obviously a lot of great resources. I think maybe let's drill down, of course, in the context of this. Is there a sense of using SEO outside of the bigger definition of that term, search engine optimization of your site, as it applies specifically to selling digital downloads?
Yes. And one of the big things about SEO when it comes to selling digital downloads, especially ebooks, courses, anything where somebody might want to pirate it, you actually want to block search engines. So the question didn't ask how to prevent search, but that is the primary thing that you have to think about first. You don't want your digital downloads to be accessible. If you make it so people don't have to give their email address or don't have to pay you, then there are a percentage of people who are going to go that route. Now, you can't stop people, but don't make it easy for them, right? So first of all, don't allow Google to index your digital downloads. And in Rainmaker, if you go into your page or your LMS item, you should be able to just say, I don't want search engines to be able to index this. You know, can turn it off. So that's the first thing. Don't index the stuff you don't want to be visible to the world. And even we as a company have made that mistake a few times, because you get excited about something, you publish it, it's been proofread, it's been edited, it looks beautiful, we've got nice images, and we forget that Google laps up your site and then shares the thank you page. So your thank you pages and your downloads shouldn't be visible. But SEO, I can give a quick 30-second SEO strategy. Design and create for human beings, then tweak for search engines. The tweaks will be your title, your headlines, your subheadlines, get your keywords in the first paragraph, then interlink your own articles within your site and your lessons and your courses and your digital downloads landing pages within your site. So you're sending a lot of Google juice, though each link has got a certain amount of equity. So you have to pass that equity to where you want it and then get links from outside. So you need to guest post, be active in forums, review products, sponsor a scout troop if you have to, talk to journalists, be interviewed, write articles for pay. People will pay you to guest post. You don't have to necessarily to do it for free. Be interviewed on podcasts, do YouTube, write comments, do Pinterest, Reddit, Facebook, Twitter. These will all either get you exposure, get you indexed, or get links directly. And that's how you get exposure to your stuff so that Google recognizes it and gives it some authority. And then when your post appears in search, go back and keep tweaking it, rinse and repeat, and make sure you keep getting links to those primary pages that you want to rank.
So you actually have to do the work instead of 1998 link directory.
You can't put Britney Spears 20 times and
yeah, right. You word stuff reading.
You don't necessarily have to do the work, though. There's a lot of VAs out there. There's a lot of freelancers, a lot of people who love doing this. There might be editors and proofreaders who do this as part of what they do. So you don't necessarily have to do it yourself. You don't have to even hire an SEO, in quotes. But one of the things that everybody seems to miss is make sure your site's connected with Google Webmaster Tools. Because Google Webmaster Tools is how Google tells you if there's problems. They'll tell you if there's a problem indexing your site or if a problem ranking you. And they'll tell you what you're ranking for in the keywords. So Google Webmaster Tools is actually Google's way of communicating with you. And they'll tell you if there's a problem.
All right. Last question before we get on to some questions in the chat for a few minutes.
This is a Robert question.
Yeah. We sell digital books on Amazon. So there are a couple of great articles on this on Copyblogger that I will link to on the final page here that we will email you out when this edited video is ready. So I'll make sure those are on that page. I think there's two or three. One was a great one from James Altucher, and then one was a little earlier than that. But anyway, this is obviously a huge question to be specifically answered by those two or maybe even three articles that I'll post. But really, a lot of the same applies here. And, you know, it's funny, coming off of the SEO question, I heard a term the other day, AEO, Amazon. Or ASO, Amazon Search Optimization. So, you know, a lot of these same principles apply. Obviously, there's a lot of questions here with production of an ebook. Uploading to Amazon is like no problem whatsoever. But once you get through all that technical stuff, you're really left with the same questions of, number one, is it a great product? Number two, do you have, or are you building an audience that wants your thing? Because without the audience, Amazon, Kickstarter, Patreon, any number of things that you might want to do offsite or interact with sites like this, it's not going to matter. Amazon might be a little bit of a different situation because it is such a massive site with that built-in audience, and their search is better and better. I think it is the third or fourth largest search engine on earth now. But yeah, beyond that technical stuff, the principles of marketing and selling digital products still apply. You just don't have the control. You don't have the direct relationship, at least at the purchase, if you're using Amazon, that you do on your own site on using Rainmaker. You don't capture, you know, that information in order to be able to talk to them, you know, through the future. But again, I'll link those up, a couple of articles that talk about some of the technical aspects as well. But the principles are the same here, no?
Yes.
The marketing and selling principles.
And people think just by putting it on Amazon, it sells itself. But no, the marketing and selling principles are very much the same. And the research that goes into it, that side of marketing, people often overlook, because I want to write a book. I'm going to write a book about this. Now let's see if somebody will buy it.
Yeah, right. I will put a plug in here. It actually just released today. I got a chance to read it. It's very good. Ryan Holiday's book, Perennial Seller. There's not technical information in there, but it goes back to this idea of going beyond looking for the short-term wins and looking at building a product and building even an audience that is basically playing the long game. So whether you're doing it on Amazon or doing it, you know, how we recommend on your Rainmaker site, of course, those principles are the same. All right, let's spend a couple of minutes looking at the chat here. Do we have any questions? I'm trying
Heather asks, are autoresponders a good way to deliver products for the tech challenged audience? Why or why not? Yes, they are. What I would say though is pair them with some sort of a download page or member dashboard or, you know, whatever you want to call it, so that they don't have to go digging in their email. So the email prompts them and tells them what they're going to get out of it. Because you little step back, you have to sell the lessons. You have to sell their attention on the lessons, because it's not just about delivering, it's about getting them to consume it. So the email will tell them all the reasons why they should check out that lesson, that product or whatever. And you might have to come back 3 or 4 times. Like if you've sold them an ebook on day one, you tell them how to get it. But then on day 3, you say, hey, have you checked out the ebook yet? And then on day 14, you say, I hope you're enjoying the ebook. Have you got any questions? And then on day 21, you say, how are you doing? Have you had any success? Have you had any challenges? Please let them. You know, you have to keep people engaged with it. Remember that they purchased it. I've got hundreds of books I've purchased on the spur of the moment, and I can't remember where they are. And I've bought the same book twice, several times.
I love that. And there's many different ways, of course, to do this. I mean, autoresponders, the writing of and building and structuring of autoresponders is an art and science within itself, of course. But I mean, think outside the box too. I remember, I think it was Chris Guillebeau. Oh man, I can't remember which product it was years ago, and I'm sure it's still running. He wrote an autoresponder, 365 messages, one for every single day of the year, and it took you through this buyer's journey, really, of the concepts, and it was all teaching. It was all, you know, valuable information. But as you just said, Chris, at different points throughout the year, he was making offers, both reminders of what you had purchased and what may work, you know, for you that he had to offer in the future. So yeah, I'm all about that with autoresponders.
Yeah, I'm just dropping that perennial seller link into the chat box.
Yeah.
I just purchased it on Kindle, so I might as well share the link.
Yeah. And we have no relationship or nothing. There's no disclosures to be made there. We're just a recommendation.
No affiliate link.
No affiliate link, nothing, yeah. Paul.
Jeff. Oh, can I just mention, Jeff, operates in the UK, wants to sell worldwide. Do people prefer to pay in USD or sterling? They absolutely prefer to pay in US dollars. I did tests of this. Now, it might have changed in the last few years. This is back when I was starting to sell digital products. And this is going to sound condescending and insulting to our American audience. I'm sorry, but this is what I got from my research, that everybody else understands US dollars, but US people don't necessarily understand your currency and the value of it and the conversion of it. A lot of people are used to buying in dollars that aren't in North America, whereas our American friends aren't necessarily used to buying in your currency. So if you have the choice, then make it multi-currency. But if you want to stick to one, make it US dollars. That's what I did. And even now, anything I sell, it's in US dollars. You know, on Etsy or Gumroad or Rainmaker, I just make it US dollars. People understand it more that way than they do the other way. I'd like Brian and Robert and Amelia to weigh in, but that's my experience.
Yeah, and if Jeff, I think you had also said that most in when you submitted a question that most of your customers are coming from the United States. So, Amelia?
Yeah, when I had my my membership site, I sold in USD, and it was very rare that I would get an Australian person saying, why are you selling in USD? So I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's kind of assumed, I think, for many people. How do you feel about it, Robert?
America.
Have you ever bought something in like euros or something, Robert?
I purchased, I think it was podcast hosting years ago from a company, and it wasn't euros. What the heck was it? I think it might've been before the euro even, but anyway, right. But my credit card was rejected and I had to call the bank and let them know that, I guess, yes, this is me or whatever. And it was a nominal amount. It wasn't hardly anything at all, in terms of the amount. But the translation was just not there and needed the conversation with the bank. So,
yeah.
But it's interesting because I do remember that company. It was a small company, but they most of their success, to your point, Chris, was in the U.S. But it must be difficult, you know, to make that happen, or especially in the early days when you're trying to just keep the product, the service up. So,
yeah, that's the good thing about a lot of the modern companies like PayPal, that they'll do the conversion for you.
Yeah. Paul.
Sarah's Paul.
No, you go.
Sarah's asking about the packaging of ebooks. Is PDF still the best way? iBooks and Kindle are different formats. What would you suggest, Robert?
Yeah, this is one where it's just more and more I am seeing people offering the suite of files. I think, you know, again, this goes back to your audience. If you're depending on who they are and what they want, you can certainly do the PDF, but I think it's been a long time since I have just seen a PDF only offered. They're offering the EPUB, they're offering the Mobi. EPUB is kind of the standard ebook file for now. Mobi is specific to Amazon. Unfortunately, Amazon likes to, you know, go their own way. And then that might be it. But anyway, those are the three major ones, of course. But
so would you outsource that, or is the software to make it easy? You know, if you've got your PDF.
Depending on how I think it's easy. I think I can say if you have the right tools. So I got a few years ago, I got and no relationship to disclose here, but I got what's it called? A Scrivener. Tool like Scrivener is great because it helps with organization of the actual writing and the product, but also the compiling aspect of exporting it as PDF, EPUB, Mobi. It's all done fairly automatically. There is a new thing that I cannot vouch for because I haven't seen it, but I'm about to purchase. It's a little more on the spendy side, called Vellum.
Vellum.
V-E-L-L-U-M. If it delivers on its promises, it looks like a next generation. It's Vellum, vellum.hub.
Yeah.
Now you're going to pay for this, but if they are delivering on their promise, this is even better because the interface is better, to me, looks better, but also there's like no hassle, you know, exporting it for print as well. I think print should not be ignored. It's not going to be a revenue driver unless you're in, you know, the audience level of hundreds of thousands. But I think it adds a really, really great element to your suite of products. And, you know, this could be done through Amazon. This gets tricky if you're doing it yourself and shipping. And as we just discussed, shipping internationally as well. Obviously, there's some issues there. But I'm going to check out this Vellum. Maybe we can get back to talking about that at a different point.
I've just dropped the link. It looks really cool. And I believe from the research I did years ago, I think Kindle have some conversion tools, but they tend to convert from like HTML and stuff, right?
That's right. And if you just do like, there's easy conversion tools all over the place. Scrivener is proven. But if you just do kind of the easy thing from a Word file, there's all kinds of, you know more about this than I do, but I guess a Word file has all kinds of crazy code that you don't want. You want a clean file, right? And yeah. So in my opinion, the best way to do that up to this point for someone who is kind of can work his way around, but not a technical person, Scrivener is the best tool for that.
Yeah.
We're getting that done.
So can I just put my hand up quickly?
Absolutely.
Just from a technical point of view, I don't think it's going to be possible to put EPUB or MOBI files into your media library. I don't think Rainmaker currently accepts them. So I think a tip here would be to put them into a zip file and then upload that zip file.
Yes.
Yeah. Or request FTP access and you can FTP whatever you like.
Yep. And that would be on back to the communications/marketing side. You still break it out. Obviously, yeah, zip it up into a zip file. That's a great point. Thank you, Amelia. But make sure you promote the fact that it's available in these three file formats on your landing page and all that, because people will see it and will notice it and want to, you know, slide it into their Kindle reader or iBooks, you know, app, those other files.
Yeah, I've just pasted the link for Scrivener as well. So that's for Windows and Mac. So it's a good, and it's also good, as you said, it's a good package for actually formulating your book and keeping notes, and especially for things like novels where you've got characters, or for nonfiction where you've got a lot of moving parts and you might want to move chapters around and keep everything organized.
I love Scrivener. Yep. Thank you for that link.
So we're at the hour. We've done it.
Yep. We've done it. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Chris Garrett. Thank you, Amelia Briscoe. Thank you, Brian Hayes. Thank you, Kelton Reed. Thank you, Claire Garrett. This transcript is going to be one of the cleanest, best transcripts you've ever seen, Claire. And I'm so glad you're out there doing this. And everybody, thanks for the questions. I give Claire trouble, but she's the best. Thank you for dropping your questions. We will be, we'll send an email to let you know when this Q&A webinar video is up on that Q&A page, where you can actually find it. And then we'll have some of those other resources that we talked about there as well. So thanks for joining us today. And thank you, everybody, for being here. Talk to you later.
Bye.